So just a quick background. I'm Toby O'Gene student, working at UC Davis. And we had a unique opportunity, kind of like Sarah did, to do some work with the NRCS in a collaborative mapping soil survey project at Pinnacles National Monument, California. So I'm going to talk a little bit about kind of questioning the notion that aspect angle is potentially a good use, a good variable in predicting the occurrence of pedogenic features, soil taxa, diagnostic properties, etc. Questioning that using solar radiation models as an alternative. Quick background on the aspect effect. It's something that all field scientists are familiar with. We can see here, this is a nice picture of this Miocene age coarse sedimentary material and a segmentation of the landscape into highly vegetated north or cool facing slopes and rather sparsely vegetated, eroded hot slopes. In this case, we're in the northern hemisphere, so it follows the north-south kind of trend. And a quick example of two representative pits. These are actually on a rhyolitic breccia material, hence the red colors in the rock down here. But on the cooler side of the slope, you tend to have these really thick, dark, in this case it's a lithic haplozero, but not very thick. But at the base of the slope, you get thick mollisols, and on the hot slopes, you tend to get inceptisols, alfisols. Pretty darn tough conditions for plants to grow there. I'll talk a little bit about the soil moisture regime in a second. This is just a quick plot of a radial distribution of the occurrence of mollisols and other soils, usually zeroorthents or alfisols in this case. The blue circles represent the occurrence of mollisols, and you can tend to see they fall into the north and northwest regions of the aspect circular variable here, and the other soils tend to fall out into the southwest. It's pretty typical stuff. I just want to highlight one thing: is aspect angle is a convenient thing that you can measure in the field. It's easy to interpret. Statistically, it's an awkward variable to deal with. It's a periodic variable. In order to perform any type of statistical test, it requires some special metrics for doing so. Including it in a regression model can also be difficult. So on to our objectives, hypotheses, and et cetera. The first hypothesis was that solar radiation models are, by now, they're readily accessible, high-resolution estimates of upland microclimate, and we think a better descriptor than aspect angle of these microclimates. The second one is that in certain upland conditions, the intensity and orientation of the relief create a series of microclimates that dominate these pedogenic processes. In our case, the distribution of upland mollisols was a pronounced feature that we chose to model. In our case, it was a microclimate stratified by geologic feature type of phenomenon. Our objectives were to construct maps of locally appropriate solar radiation values. I'll get to what that means in just a second. The next objective was to construct models which predict the occurrence of upland mollisols within the context of the soil survey there. And then to try and take what we predicted and turn that into some new soil survey products, tools, or some methods for insight into the energetics of pedogenesis. Quick overview, study site. Pinnacles National Monument is located about 40 miles south of Hollister, California. It's a xeric soil moisture regime, thermic to hyperthermic soil temperature regime, about 42 centimeters of mean annual precipitation. A little bit about the geology. Pinnacles National Monument has an interesting juxtaposition of relatively fine-grained rhyolitic breccia right next to some rather coarse to moderately coarse sedimentary materials. They're both about the same age, Miocene age, and they sit non-conformally on Jurassic granitic materials. And all three of those main geologic types are expressed within the park. Kind of a neat feature is that the San Andreas Fault was, or movement along the San Andreas Fault is responsible for that juxtaposition. Quick overview, I mentioned this work was done alongside soil survey operations. A quick breakdown of the major geologic strata, the representative area within the park of each strata, and the number of soil survey sites, and the percentage of those sites within each strata that were, in fact, mollisols. We had a total of about 199 pits used in our modeling efforts. We went out a little bit later and collected another 35 sites independent of the soil survey to try and add some evaluation to our approach. Quick overview of the elements of what's called a clear sky solar radiation model. This is one approach to modeling solar radiation when you cannot account for the influence of clouds. We thought since soils form over geologic time scales, the influence of clouds is as smooth over time. It's just too difficult to predict. The key features here are the beam component of solar radiation and the diffuse component of solar radiation. The partitioning between these two is dictated by atmospheric clarity involving the concentration of aerosols, plant exudates, soil moisture. Those things vary seasonally and within distance from major ecosystem types, distance from the ocean, and whatnot. And quick mention that a standard pyranometer, you find this on a lot of weather stations. This is measuring global radiance, which is the sum total of the beam and diffuse components. I'll get into why that's important in just a second. The other aspect of these clear sky models is that they can take into account the influence of local shading from adjacent terrain, surface albedo. There's several different models with increasing amounts of parameters that you can stick into them. Again, so the idea of a locally appropriate solar radiation value is that it's tied to coupling with local estimates of atmospheric clarity. In this case, we're using a factor called the link turbidity factor. It's pretty easy to calculate, and I'm going to go through the steps right now. The first step is estimating the beam radiance on the normal for each day of the year if you need link turbidity for each day, which is what we did. And you can disaggregate that from the global radiance measurements from pyranometer using a measurement of the solar elevation angle, which you can get from an alternate form of the same radiation model, and an estimation of the partitioning between beam and diffuse components. It's possible to actually calculate this from local empirical relationships, but you do need a long record of clear sky measurements. We didn't happen to have enough, so we used a number from the literature in that case. So now we have our beam radiance on the normal, that is beam radiance perpendicular to the soil surface. From that, we can calculate the link turbidity value for each day, which, again, it's a rather simple equation, but it takes into account the interplay between extraterrestrial radiation, beam radiance on the normal, and then some atmospheric thickness and dispersion properties looked up from the literature. So now we use our daily link turbidity values to parameterize our daily totals of the beam and diffuse components. So again, the key point here is that we're summing up the beam and the diffuse components in half-hour intervals for each day of the year, sum that all together to come up with a value at each grid cell of the DEM that represents the sort of the mean radiation load, taking into account the influence of local shading and et cetera. I'm going to go over again that we're trying to model the distribution of upland mollisols, and so This encapsulates several important things. One, the melanization, the darkening, incorporation of organic matter on these cooler slopes. That represents the, you know, the stocks of nutrients in these cases, decomposition of organic materials, et cetera. It also encompasses a bit of the hill slope dynamics. Due to the definition of a mollic epipedon, there's thickness requirements, et cetera. So in cases where you have erosion or colluvium, that's going to be encapsulated somewhat. So again, we're estimating a taxonomic feature, so those specific properties get smoothed out a bit. Just as a control, we're using the aspect classification of north and south facing slopes. We're going to be comparing our solar radiation model against that. And in this case, we're using logistic regression to take into account that the influence of solar radiation on pedogenesis at any given site is stratified by these geologies. The geologies are so different that you end up with fine textures on one geology, coarse textures on another. The water holding capacity, the soil color, surface texture, those all influence the balance between net radiation in and out, and the soil heat flux. So we can't numerically talk about those, but we can stratify the influence of solar radiation with the geology. Quick demonstration. This is a complicated figure, but there's two important points here. One, this y-axis is the daily sum of solar radiation as measured by two things. One, these dots here represent 11-year average sum radiance values at a weather station within the park. The gray line represents the variation about that mean. So in the winter months and spring months, you have the most variation from clouds and what have you. This black line represents the output of the solar radiation model as fit to the weather station records. Now that fit, the goodness of fit tests and whatnot shows that our numbers not only accurately represent the magnitude of the daily radiation values, but they also represent the seasonal variation. Nothing very magical there. The key point is that if you want to estimate numbers, real numbers, in those regions, estimation of something like a link turbidity factor is a good way to localize those estimates. Now a rundown of the two different models that we're comparing here. Quick overview, these evaluation metrics, we're using percent correctly classified, this PCC, pretty typical evaluation metric, but to try and capture some of the nuances of misclassifications and correct classifications by chance alone, we're using Cohen's kappa, Kendall's tau, a statistic called the receiver operating characteristic curve. These right here are computed on binary contingency tables. I'll explain that in a second. This one right here is calculated on a probability value. These are some cutoffs from the literature and from significance tests that we're using to evaluate these models. So for the soil survey sites, we can see that the aspect classification comes out about 70% right within those 199 points, which is difficult to discount. The Cohen's kappa, Kendall's tau, and receiver operating characteristic curve area aren't quite as optimistic. In remote sensing literature, these values would be unacceptable. And like I said, this is an evaluation of model performance, not necessarily accuracy alone, which is what the percent correctly classified is. This logistic regression model, taking into account solar radiation stratified by geology, comes out with consistently better results. We saw the same behavior at a series of verification sites that were developed independently of the soil survey. In this case, the values tend to be a little bit higher. We tried to span known gradients when we selected these sites, so that could be a possible explanation of that. So pretty pictures. When you apply that logistic regression model to study site, a couple important things come out. These colors represent the probability of encountering an upland mollisol. So these lowlands are gray. We're not trying to model fluvial processes that dominate there. This region right here, now it's kind of washed out. Greens and blues, whatnot, those represent that coarse sedimentary material, the material that has an intrinsically low water holding capacity. It's very well drained, and the probability of encountering a mollisol, which is often controlled by this moisture dynamics, is much lower. Over here on this volcanic material, weathers to finer soils, and that probability is thus higher. It mirrors the observations from our data points. Important thing to note is that these white lines represent an order 2 and 3 soil survey that was conducted alongside these studies from the exact same data points. There's a couple interpretations. One, these probability values hint at the component identification within map units, something that a lot of people have been calling for. It also hints at the description of uncertainty. A couple more minutes. Okay. Getting back to uncertainty, if you adjust the color scheme just a little bit, with logistic regression, it's understood that values closer to 0 or 1 represent the most accurate predictions. So if we adjust our color scale so that near the center we have the a lack of color, close to 1 we have probability of predicting a mollisol, closer to 0 probability of some other soil. This right here then is an indication of both how certain we are of encountering those things. So again, something people have been asking for a long time, uncertainty characterizations. It also tells you where the model doesn't fit. And it's either because the mental model that was used to create this breaks down in those locations, or else the number of observation sites is low. So this is an evaluation tool for going back and filling in the gaps. Quick comparison, the map right here, this is a map of the Sirgo map units. Color scheme here is a percentage of each map unit that was classified as a mollisol. Over here, with a corresponding color scheme, is using the logistic regression approach, is the probability from 0 to 1, as opposed to the map unit composition from 0 to 100% of encountering a mollisol. The stratification of the patterns is very similar. They are both derived from geologic maps initially. But the absolute values are quite a bit different in a number of cases. So that's interesting for map unit evaluation or an evaluation of homogeneity. But it also reflects that these two products were created at very different scales, and that the soil survey is taking into account estimations of rock outcroppings, which we didn't try to do. So there's some interesting prospects there. Sort of deviating a little bit, it turns out that the probability values that we came up with using this logistic regression approach against solar radiation, they correlate pretty well with surface carbon concentrations. Again, this is something for another talk, but it is potential for predicting carbon stocks in upland regions, other possible uses for probability values. So to wrap it up, solar radiation models, they're accessible and simple to parameterize with modern computers. Just about anyone can set one up. And locally appropriate estimates can be derived from weather station records. And we feel it's an accurate predictor of microclimate. These numerical models of soil genesis, we think, are physically based predictions of taxonomic entities. It hints into maybe new ways of evaluating map unit design, mapping out soil components within a map unit, and then delivering an uncertainty assessment, again, which is something that people want. But it also represents something else in terms of soil survey. It represents a transfer of knowledge, sort of a quantification of the mental models that soil surveyors are using, which is usually lost. That explicit model is lost in the soil survey. Now, there's hints at it in the map unit description, but if those mental models can be encapsulated in numerical recipes or what have you, those can be delivered in the soil survey as well, which give a very transparent insight into that map unit design. Again, so maybe new ways of presenting map unit composition, uncertainty, and these maps of taxor properties might give rise to a larger adoption of soils data within the modeling community, global circulation models, etc., and also lead to fewer interpretive mistakes, which commonly happen when non-soil scientists try to use soil survey. So, thank you. Yeah, that would be something to do. What I did is I used the European Solar Radiation Atlas model. So it's something that's been out for about 10 years now and is based on several important studies, mostly based in Europe. Sure, I mean, that could be maybe another chapter in my thesis if I can get away with that. You'll have to talk to Toby about that.
All right, very good.
Thanks.